Welcome to Climate Champions. I'm Lee Krivat, and every Monday, well, except for this earlier than usual episode, more on that later, I publish a new episode with a new climate champion as my guest. We talk about what they do to help mitigate climate change, what their vision for the future is, and what made them motivated for the challenge. If you or someone you know is a climate champion, please let me know at www.krivatenergyinnovations.com. On episode 26, my guest is Will Moore, city council candidate in San Diego. Will's is the first mainstream council campaign to put climate at the top of the city's agenda, saying it's time for cities like San Diego to lead on climate. Will discussed his driving an EV being climate friendly, but also pointed out that the energy doesn't come from fairy dust. I responded with a dissertation on natural gas being the primary energy source at the margin. Jeremy, what does energy at the margin coming from natural gas mean?
Look, there's a lot of people in the stock market, and people, when they invest, they want to make money. They're greedy, so they invest and they buy more than they really have. They buy on the margin. You see, what happens is when they do that, they're indebted and they're in debt, and a lot of times they're at risk of losing money, so they're afraid to spend money. And in those moments of their life, they're very concerned about saving money, so they want to get their energy from natural gas because they're told that natural gas is cheaper. The problem is digging, drill, baby, drill, and all those things, and they don't care anymore because they're not trying to find a better alternative kind of energy.
Very nice try, except no. Jeremy Krivat is the younger of my two younger brothers, both who, like me, perform comedy improv. I'm very excited to be doing an improv comedy show with him on July 20th with Comedy Sports Sacramento. He and his wife, Jocelyn, are co-authors of a memoir about each of their experiences 10 years ago when Jocelyn needed a life-saving heart transplant. Spoiler alert, since then she has written the book and ran two half marathons. If you are interested in purchasing the memoir, search for Krivat on Amazon. It's called In Sickness and in Health. You might also see my wife's gourmet cat mystery novels, one of which was a bestseller, and my daughter's volumes of short stories, Tales of Mundane Magic. I'm a huge fan of all of them. The term energy at the margin means that when one more unit, and that would be a kilowatt hour, right, I know, when one more unit of electricity is needed, whether to charge your car or cell phone or run your air conditioner, how is that new marginal energy made? In California, since most of the time the renewable energy and nuclear energy are already producing whatever they're going to produce, any additional or marginal energy has to come from burning additional natural gas. So when you charge your car in the middle of the night, more wind generation isn't suddenly kicking into gear. The wind is already doing the most that it possibly can. Perhaps one day, solar energy from the day before will be discharged from a battery that was storing that energy to get our marginal energy. But that is rarely the case today. Okay, so I'm publishing this episode before Monday because Will has a contribution deadline of June 30th. So, if you like what you hear and you feel inclined, head over to moreforsandiego.com. That's moreforsandiego.com, and help him out prior to Monday. Welcome to Climate Champions. I'm with Will Moore. He's a candidate for San Diego City Council in District 1, which is University City, La Jolla, and Carmel Valley, which is where I live. Welcome to Climate Champions.
Thanks, Lee. I'm glad to be here.
So with regards to climate change, can you talk about a special or significant moment that caused you to feel like you had to do something with regard to climate change?
I don't think there was a particular moment. So I'm 46 years old, born in 1973, and it has been known to climate scientists, people who study this sort of thing, for my entire life that we had a problem with carbon creating negative long-term effects to the climate. oil, coal, that sort of thing. And so we've always known that. We haven't always known exactly what those effects would be. There was a time we thought it would cool, the time we thought it would heat. But we've always known that it would create a large-scale negative impact if we didn't do something about it. And so there's not a particular moment in time when it became a crisis to me. It's always been something I've known was an issue. And, you know, I was, the first club I joined in college was the Environmental Forum at Georgia Tech. I've always had an interest, and I've always considered this to be an important issue. And that's really why I've become the first city council candidate in San Diego's history to lead with a climate change agenda.
Well, I personally am thankful that you're doing that, because I think it's the issue of our time that we really need to solve. So can you talk about why it's personally important to you?
Well, I live on Earth, and all of my friends live here,
and
it's where I keep all my stuff, so that's why it's personally important. I'm not thinking about the environment and all that. It's, you know, the Earth is fundamentally it's a big iron rock that floats through space. The Earth is still going to be here in a billion years. We, you and me, are the people that evolved under this current climate, and if it changes, we're not going to do so well. So I'm not talking about something abstract. I'm talking about us as people very directly being affected by climate change. And is it selfish? Sure. I don't want the human species to cease to exist.
I don't know if that's selfish. Selfish really implies you yourself, and you yourself will probably be fine.
I don't know. Well, I mean, we're looking at 2 feet of sea level rise through 2050. That's going to create massive social problems. We've created this entire social and economic structure worldwide that's based on the climate being what it is now. If you look back through our history, much smaller changes in weather over a period of time, droughts, a couple of famines, make massive changes in civilization where lots of people are very negatively affected before their house actually gets consumed by sea level rise. So, yeah, it is pretty selfish, and we have to treat climate as a crisis that it is, which means to take it seriously and to see what we can do to mitigate and make there be less climate change, while also, on a public policy level, admitting that this is happening and realizing that we're going to have to take steps to just deal with the effects as they come to fruition.
And how do you explain climate change and the need to mitigate? You just explained it to me why it's important. But when somebody doesn't believe that it's important, how do you convince them that it is?
I don't. That's the short answer. And it's a sad short answer, but I think that some or most of the folks who you run into on a daily basis that says, I don't believe in giant climate change, explain it to me. First of all, I've never had a scientist at the Scripps Institute ask me that question, right? I've never had anyone who was ever had any chance of ever cooperating with me on the issue ask me that question. They just want to make you spend your time jumping through their hoops. So instead of trying to persuade people who, frankly, are not going to be persuaded, and even if I succeed in persuading them, they're going to go and watch 4 hours of Fox News that night or Alex Jones or God knows what and be persuaded again the other way. So it doesn't do any good. We have a problem. Most of the people and almost all of the scientists agree we have a problem. And waiting on people who you're not going to persuade before you do anything is a fool's errand. I've said many times over the years, some things are a debate. Some things are, well, we got to figure out what the right answer is. We know what the right answer is. This isn't a debate. It's a fight. There are people that make a lot of money pulling carbon out of the ground and putting it into the sky. Those folks are not going to agree that they shouldn't do that anymore. We're going to have that fight. And, you know, the folks at Exxon and Shell have known since the 70s that this carbon in the atmosphere was going to be a problem. And they have fought us and distracted us ever since with these false ideas of, oh, the climate always changes, which is, of course, both true and irrelevant and ridiculous. So as long as we spend our time trying to persuade people who have no interest in being persuaded, we are wasting our time. Building coalitions about getting people you can get together to take actions you can take.
I think that's a common feeling. On the other hand, I recently had somebody call me up and say, Lee, what do I tell this person, or should I introduce them to you? They don't believe that climate change is real. And I told them, well, most people I'm interviewing are saying, give up. If they don't agree now or understand it now, then they're not looking very hard and they're not trying. They're trying to just defend a status quo position because there's no backup data that would support that everything is just fine and dandy, especially in San Diego and California, where we're threatened by fires.
Yeah, well, we have a lot of threats, and I'm heartened to know that fewer people that you talk to are going for that kind of sucker bet of convince me of this thing that I'm committed to. You know, it's part of my identity that I'm a climate denier, and convince me to give that up. That's, of course, a losing battle. And there's perhaps a place for some of us to go and try to do that work. A political campaign is not the place to try to fundamentally change people's worldviews. What you're trying to do is put together a coalition to accomplish some action.
So I'm considering writing a 1 to 2 hour read primer book on this exact topic that you're saying we don't need. And that is a summary of some of these conversations and some of the data that's out there to try to say, look, these are all the reasons we have to fight climate change as quick and as urgently as we can. And here are some of the proof, if you need it, that it exists. Here's some of the impacts that are already happening. Part of me thinks there's value to that, but when I hear people say, look, it's time to fight, not to convince, I think maybe I shouldn't spend my time that way.
Let me give you a frame for how to evaluate that question.
Yeah.
Find someone who denies climate change exists and convince them that it does. And then in scientific fashion, write down what exactly you did. And if a book that it takes a couple hours to read is something that convinces them from a psychological standpoint, then yes, that would be a useful thing.
Well, based on my attempts at convincing people,
right,
I think you've just convinced me not to write a book. So tell me what you do today to fight climate change and what you intend to do in the future.
So this is, I'm going to take this as a political candidate. To fight climate change myself personally, I drive an electric car. You know, I do all of the, you know, good suburban liberal things you're supposed to do, right?
Sure.
Which, if you list them in the year 2000, sound really cool. If you list them in the year 2019 and you talk about how you recycle and drive an electric car, you sound lame. So I'm not going to get too much into that.
I did talk to somebody who said that they, Lincoln Blevins, up at Burbank Power and Water, who said he looks forward to the day when we stop saying electric car and we just say car.
Right.
And we stop saying renewable energy and we just say energy.
Right. That's where we need to go. And those problems are not individual choice problems. Those are major structural problems that we face. We, here in Carmel Valley, which is where you and I live, we can't get around with anything but your car. You could try riding your bike. You're going to be afraid you're going to die the whole time. You can try walking, but you're going to be walking 2 or 3 miles to get anywhere. So we have one option, which is our car. So one of the agenda items I have for climate change fight is to improve our public transit access, to have a bus going up and down Delmar Heights Road. We don't have to. One of the things that I think transit action advocates over the years have done mistakenly is to immediately jump to, hey, everybody, wouldn't it be great if we lived in this utopia where we never had to get in cars and we went around in subways everywhere like Paris or New York or something? And I have found over the years that people that don't live in New York don't live there because they don't want to. And as a practical matter, that world is not going to rise in San Diego tomorrow. We've spent 70 years building a city for cars, and we're not going to build a city that doesn't depend on that infrastructure in 2-10 years. It's not going to happen. What we need to prioritize, and what I think people will come along with, which is really the political question, is options. We need a chance to take a bus 1 out of 10 trips, have it go somewhere I want to go. But if we stop thinking about our transit infrastructure as, how do I reduce traffic? How do I drive somewhere faster? How do we move cars around faster? And start thinking of it as, how do we move you and me where we want to go, when we want to get there, in a reasonable way? And that's what people want. So that is one of the big steps on climate change mitigation, because that is a much more efficient way of looking at transit, which is about a third of our total carbon footprint in the San Diego area, and that's a problem throughout Southern California. That is an example of one of the agenda items. Other agenda items...
I want to pop in on that one.
Yeah, go ahead.
If there was an electric bus, because mm-hmm. there's no reason not to go electric yeah. with a bus, and one that went down Carmel Country Road, yeah. which is in front of my house, mm-hmm. and another one that went down Del Mar Heights, and they ran every 5 or 10 minutes, there are times my wife and I would walk places
right.
knowing that we wouldn't have to walk back, so we could do a nice hike, and we could take a bus back.
Exactly. And just having that option, and you're not going to take that every day, that's not where your work is, but having that option, we got to figure out how to best spend our dollars, which are unfortunately somewhat constrained on the local government level, how to best spend our dollars to expand our non-car options, just with a view of getting you and me around, in a way that's effective for transit. And we have a thirst in, I've seen it in University City, I've seen it in Carmel Valley, I've seen it in La Jolla. We have a thirst for different ways to get around. People are aging. They don't want to drive anymore. Our younger people are not of that kind of cultural generation where, because you and me were, you got the car keys when you were 16 and you're a man now, right? That's, you can get around town and you have some options with your life. It's I used to call it the suburban bar mitzvah, was you get your car keys when you're 16. That culture is no longer live in the new generation, but we grew up like that. So when you start saying you have to get out of your car, people kind of freak out. And understandably, there's a cultural resistance to that. And we need to think about that. But our debate is evolving substantially as really that generation that came of age in the 60s is getting to the point where they don't want to drive around a lot anymore. I have older friends who all have an evening event for the campaign, and they'll say, do you have one in the daytime? Because I don't like to drive at night. And so people get shut in because their only option is the automobile. So that's one example. There are a lot of others, community choice, encouraging solar generation. But there are a lot of points on that agenda. But what's most important, because we have a 10-year, I consider this a 10-year project, and we don't know what our options are going to be in 2026, but I will tell you, I'm going to evaluate them with a climate lens, because San Diego is a frontline city on climate change. We have the ocean right here, the ocean's over there, and it's coming this way, right? And that's something we need to think about very hard. We also have options for mitigating climate change, and then we have a lot of road infrastructure that we could transition into some transit infrastructure. We have a lot of gains we can make there. San Diego has a lot of ability to lead, and our civic culture has been afraid to lead. We've been this kind of sleepy beach town, and we've thought of ourselves that way for a very long time. And there's almost a cultural resistance, especially at City Hall, to doing anything aggressive. And part of that is, you know, San Diego, we're nice people. We're lovely people. San Diegans are literally the nicest people I've ever met. But being aggressive requires turning it up a notch and maybe bringing up the unpleasant thing in a meeting, bringing up the troublesome aspect of life so that you can work out a problem and make some progress. And I think that doesn't happen sometimes. And that's why we don't like to show leadership on a civic level. And I'd like to change that because I see a thirst for that in the public.
You've kind of wandered into another thing I'd like to talk about, and that is challenges that you have faced or mm-hmm. think you will be facing in order to help mitigate climate change.
We face a lot of challenges to deal with climate change. One, people still make a lot of money extracting carbon from the ground and putting it in the sky. And they really like making that sort of money. And even folks who don't like it very much work for big companies and they don't want to get fired. So, you know, everybody's got bills to pay, right? So I get that. But we have big structural issues related to the influence of our carbon industry on the political system. So that's always a challenge. One of the other major challenges we face is just how deeply ingrained into our everyday lives carbon consumption is. You and I live in the same neighborhood. We live about 3 miles away from each other. I drove here. Now, I drove my electric car, but that electricity doesn't come from fairy dust, right? that electricity doesn't come primarily from solar, that electricity comes mostly, I think, on our grid from natural gas. You'd probably know that better than I do.
Well, what's interesting is that we have a pretty high percentage, especially in San Diego. SDG&E does a really good job of procuring renewable energy. Mm-hmm. The issue is that additional energy that you use, like to charge your car, is probably coming on the margin from natural gas being burned.
Right.
There are days when we are curtailing renewable, but I think the majority of marginal energy is natural gas.
Yeah, unless I'm charging it at 3 p.m., right. But we're not going to talk about load management today. You come on my podcast, I'll ask you about load management.
Okay.
I know that is a problem that exists. I don't.
No worries at all.
One of the major challenges we face, especially in our political discussions, is that the frame of reference everybody comes into in our political discussions is old. We have a frame of reference of this right versus left from 1970 that somehow has still lingered into an era where it's largely irrelevant. One of the challenges I always face is to get out of that frame and say, all right, well, this is the world as we currently, and this is why I love local politics, because people don't have as many prior conceptions about how the world should work for local policy. This is the world as we see it. These are our challenges. And if you just talk to people on that basis and try to bring all your problems down to a level that we can really be human about how we're going to solve them, then we'll have a better result. One example is, like I was talking about a moment ago, the car versus transit. I talk to folks, and I go door to door, I knock on doors, I talk to voters up and down the line, right to left. Some people will say, well, we need to do all transit, like Paris, London, New York City. And other people will say, we need to build more roads so that we can have less traffic. And if I ask two or three questions, I can get everybody to say the same thing.
Nice.
And that thing, if I ask what your actual why are you concerned about this? And eventually, if you ask, and it doesn't take long, why does this concern you? Why is this important to you? People will say, I spend too much time alone in my car. And that is something that 100% of people agree about. Everybody agrees. They personally spend too much time alone in their car.
I like that, man. They can listen to my podcast. I need that time.
Right. Well, if you could spend that exact same time making dinner, you know, listen to podcasts while making dinner, that'd be great.
I was just kidding.
And that's how bringing those discussions that are on these irrelevant, not irrelevant, but no longer quite squarely appropriate to the problems we actually face, old frames of reference, more to our, just the way we interact with the world as people, we get rid of a lot of our divisions, which are unfortunately just kind of cultural signaling. These are my friends and those are your friends, and they don't have anything to do with our problems. If we get out of that frame of reference, we can really solve some significant problems. That's when we start making progress. So that's always a challenge. And that's something I've done with, I'm a business lawyer by trade. So I help people make deals. Now, President Trump has made making deals like he's put a taint on one of my favorite things in the world. Making deals is not exploiting people. You're making people get along. I was at a career day at the Preuss High School about a year ago. And I was the lawyer table. And the kids who kind of are interested in law come and sit at the table. And one of the kids said, how do you make people do what you want? And I think he was expecting some sort of like fancy manipulative answer, like here's how you trick people into doing what you want. And I looked at him, I said, you ask people what they want, and you figure out what they actually want, and you give it to them. And the kid, just like his eyes got wide, he said somehow the obvious answer had not occurred to him. When we're trying to solve problems, we figure out what people actually want. And sometimes that requires answering another question after what they say they want. But the project as a community leader is not to do what people think they want right now, but to do what, if you do it in 10 years, people are going to be glad you did.
Tell me about some successes that you're proud of.
Well, the thing I'm proudest of is, as someone who was raised by a single mother, is that I have raised my son to the age of 14. He's currently attending Torrey Pines High School, And I, yeah, that's the thing I'm proudest of.
Tell me about some other things you're proud of. No, that's a great one. That's a great one. That's not diminishing.
Literally the main one. So I am from, I grew up in one of the poorest neighborhoods in America, a little place called Macon, Georgia. It's kind of a depressed southern town. It has not grown since, I think, 1950. I think it still has the same population it did in 1950. According to the census, it's a little larger because they consolidated city and county governments, but that's boring, so cut that out. Half of the people at my high school dropped out of high school. Amazing. I did well. I got a scholarship to Georgia Tech, which is a public school in Georgia. I've always felt having the assistance of my community in getting out, because when you grow up in the hood, everybody's like, we got to get out of here. And so everybody's trying to push you to do better. And all of the assistance I had with, you know, student loans and scholarships and motivation from, you know, teachers and peers helped me so much that I've always felt the need to give that back. And I've always kept those folks in my mind as people I owe to do well in the world that they've helped put me into. So after college, I joined the Peace Corps and did a tour advising small businesses in Tambacounda, Senegal. So did that from 1997 to 1999. I learned how to speak French and Wolof, which is what folks speak in Senegal. Wolof, yes.
Wow.
That has not been terribly useful in San Diego, where nobody speaks either of those languages. But it did provide a good perspective on very different parts of the world. Came back, went to Columbia Law, and I've been practicing small business law really ever since. I consider that path really a success. And I had my son in 2004, moved out here to San Diego in 2006. And how much this community has embraced me in those 13 years has really been gratifying, and how much support I've received in this campaign is a major success, and how much people have embraced the agenda, climate, housing, jobs, which if you'll put that at the top of the podcast, climate, housing, jobs.
Climate, housing, jobs.
Climate, housing, jobs has, I think, been successful, and I have a couple of opponents in this race who now, you know, because city council races don't tend to be about things. They tend to be about how good a guy you are. I led off this campaign strongly with climate, housing, jobs, and now you hear the agenda come out of my opponent's mouths about climate and housing. Not as strongly, but we've set the terms of the debate. That's another success.
When you look out 10, 20, 30, 40 years, what do you see for the Earth? What do you see for California? What do you see for Carmel Valley?
Okay, I'm really glad you framed it in that time frame.
Okay.
Because we have a city that tends to look forward about 6 months and backwards about 40 years. San Diego tends to argue about things for a very long time after things aren't relevant anymore, and sometimes blows minor things up into a big deal. We argued about a football team that was definitely leaving town for 20 years.
Okay, that made me very sad, by the way.
And it made everybody sad, but it was gonna happen. That was baked. It was that football team was always more valuable in Los Angeles than it was here. To bring it back to your question, over 10, 20, 30 years is the time frame on which we build cities. We build cities not in four-year cycles. We build cities, humans build cities on 50, 100-year cycles. And we need to think about, what does San Diego want to be? Does San Diego want to be a city that's traffic congested? Does San Diego want to be a city where everyone lives out and drives two-hour commutes to work every day? Do we want to be a city with 5 feet of sea level rise where our infrastructure is crumbling? No, we don't. How do we get to a place where San Diego is a thriving city in 30, 40, 50 years? The way we do that is we make decisions now about how do we accommodate having our kids be able to stay here. Most of our growth in San Diego for quite some time has actually been births and deaths, right? Just San Diegans making more San Diegans. And that's something that I encourage. I like my kids, and I like them to stay in town, and other people feel the same way about their kids. We need places for our kids to live. We need to figure out where we want our population growth to go, because I don't hear anybody saying we should just you know, have some sort of one-child policy. Nobody says that. And it, as long as...
I can quote you if you want.
Nobody says that. And I think that that is not a thing that anybody really wants. But unless that's what you want to do, you got to figure out where your growth is going to go. And San Diego has had this resistance to growth for so long that we've kind of forgotten that that's resistance to our children staying in town. If we look at San Diego over 10, 20, 30 years, we have to figure out where people live, we have to figure out how they get around, and we have to figure it out on that time frame, not on the next 6 months or 2 years.
So when you look out 30 to 50 years, yeah, do you see what the city looks like in your head somewhere? Do you see that future, and what does it look like?
I think we have good transit citywide. I think we're going to have more light rail lines, solid bus lines. I think we're going to be about, at most, half as dependent on cars as we are. Half of us will be, you know, taking transit. The rest of us will be taking transit sometimes. And we need to plan out how those lines are going to get built, because we've reached the edge of what we can do with the car-centric transportation mode. We are going to have some more population centers. In this city, we're going to have to figure out where those population centers are going to go. There are some places that I think are more ripe for them than others, but we're all going to have some expansion. One of my favorite places in San Diego is the La Jolla Village area, the down, not on the mountain, but down, yes, towards the coast. And that started out as a single-family neighborhood, and it still kind of is, but as I go door-to-door in La Jolla Village, and I do this to campaign, it'll say, you want to go to 1462 Coran Street. And I'll look at 1460, and I'll see 1470 next door, and I'll spend 3 minutes walking around looking for 1462, which they've built in the backyard. So they've managed to triple the housing in La Jolla, and at the same time make their community better, because now the, you know, the density that creates the amenities, it's still a walkable, nice walkable village neighborhood, but they've got people living there in enough that their kids were able to stay there. So that's the sort of, for our suburban communities, we're going to densify that way. For our communities that are currently mostly parking lot, we're probably going to be a little more aggressive with some multifamily kinds of structures. But that's what I see San Diego in 50 years. And the reason we want to talk about 50 years, I don't think anybody looks at 50 years and says, we can't change anything in the next 50 years. Nobody really believes that. If you talk about the next 2 years, the next project, the next one thing, it's easy to say, we don't want to change this. But folks know that we have to change over time. And, you know, the long term is made up of a bunch of little short terms. And we need to accept that and plan for it. Because if you don't plan for change and make a change happen that you want, a change that you don't want to happen is going to come anyway.
Given climate change, is San Diego going to be here in 50 years?
San Diego is going to be here in 50 years. Mission Beach won't. Mission Beach is gone. We were having that whole discussion about Airbnbs a couple years ago, which I suppose we're continuing to have, and the exception for Mission Beach. I kept telling people, it doesn't matter. It would be irresponsible to sell somebody a 30-year mortgage in Mission Beach right now, because that house isn't going to be there when you pay it off. So we are going to lose some parts of town, and we have to plan around like what to do about Mission Beach, what to do about the rail line on the Del Mar Bluffs, which we're pretending we're fixing right now, but we're kicking the can on that. And all of the plans for rerouting that rail line are both expensive with more money than we have and also out with 40-year time frames. We're going to need to fix that before then. But San Diego will be here. We're just going to have to pick which San Diego we want in the future.
Do you have any questions for me?
Questions for you. Will you drop the following into the beginning of this podcast? There are currently, and I checked this morning on the Scripps Institute website, at Mauna Loa measured 414.22 parts per million of carbon in the atmosphere.
Wait, hold on. This is not a question for me.
This is just a drop.
Let me ask a different question of you. Is there anything else you want to talk about?
There is a couple things. I think we need to keep in mind that our problem is not that you and me are bad people or irresponsible and you know, we got to shame people into doing the right thing on climate change. Our problem is very simple. It's not a moral conundrum. It's not any of those things. We have too much carbon in the atmosphere. We should have about 350 parts per million. We right now have set a record at 414, measured this morning by the Scripps Institute. So that's one note I want to make. The other note I want to make is that I'm running for city council in District 1. My website is moreforsandiego.com. If you'd like to support the first climate-focused campaign in the history of San Diego, like 15 elected officials have done, like multiple clubs and organizations have done, and we have real momentum. If you want to add to that momentum, you can go to moreforsandiego.com/donate and make up to a $600 contribution. You can also make a $7 or $25 contribution, and that would be much appreciated too.
You definitely are running for office. Okay, if that's it, I'll wrap this up, and if it's okay with you, I'll wrap it up with a rap.
Please.
You're Will Moore, and you care about the Earth. You've been understanding the problem since birth. You grew up in Georgia. You said, what the heck? You joined an environmental forum at Georgia Tech. You feel like there's only one problem to fear, and that's too much carbon in the atmosphere. When I asked you what you're proud of, you had only one. You said your biggest success was your son, where you grew up. The sun was really bacon. You grew up in Georgia, Macon. You wanted to make sure you were turning three knobs, and that was climate, housing, and jobs.
I'm amazed. That was great. Fear and atmosphere was, that was, I think, my favorite.
Will is from Macon, Georgia. He earned a scholarship to Georgia Tech and found his way to the city with the nicest people anywhere, San Diego, which he has called home ever since. And speaking of San Diego, if you are visiting this wonderful city and want some great laughs, most weekends I'm doing improv comedy at either the Old Town Improv Company or Finest City Improv or both. And if you want to improvise raps, hopefully a lot better than I do, consider taking a class at an improv workshop in your town. My training in improvisation helps me face the fear and let out the lee. To confirm specific show dates, or if you have comments or questions about the podcast, visit my website at www.crevatenergyinnovations.com and drop me an email. I would love to hear from you. And if you're enjoying the Climate Champions podcast series, please subscribe, rate it 5 stars if you're an Apple user, and tell your climate-concerned friends about it. Will Moore's vision is a San Diego where traffic no longer consumes a significant percentage of people's time, where they have more time to enjoy all that San Diego has to offer and are able to leverage public transportation, significantly helping to mitigate climate change.